How many of you, when you were kids, if you weren't kids still, ever got lost as a child? Anybody ever get lost? Okay. When I was about to go into kindergarten, so Sam's age, I went with my sister's daycare, soon to be my daycare when I started at the school, to Marineland, and I got lost there. The teacher lost me the first time I ever went on a trip with them, and they lost me. It didn't bode well for them. What's interesting about it is that Lauren, when she was a little girl, got lost at SeaWorld. So it clearly was meant to be, as long as somebody finally found us and brought us home. There's something about marine animals or something, I don't know. But I got lost, and here's the deal, though. If you had asked me some questions about it, how long was I lost, I couldn't tell you. I remember going to Marineland that day. I actually remember it. But I don't remember getting lost because I was a kid. I don't even know if I knew I was lost. And isn't that really the experience as a kid? Oh, look at this one staring at me right here. My kid's staring me down in the corner there. When you're a kid, you don't even know that that's happening when you get lost. Now, I have lost that kid, Sam, once, one time. And it was at Ross Dress for Less, which officially is my least favorite place in the world. Off the record is a place I love, but don't tell anybody I said that. You just feel like you're winning. You get these special deals or something. But I was shopping in the section that's kind of houseware slash auto supply slash stereo slash everything in one corner, and I'm looking around, and I take my eyes off of Sam for 1 minute. Lauren is in the car at this point, and I take my eyes off of Sam for 1 minute, and he's gone, okay? And I panic. And here's the deal. If you were to ask me how long was he missing, I know the exact answer because I was the one who lost him. And I know that that was the scariest 15 seconds of my life. And I didn't even have enough time to come up with an excuse to tell Lauren why I lost him and why it wasn't my fault. But I was panicked. I didn't know what to do. My breath was gone, and I was kind of stirring around in circles. And then I remembered that the toy section is in the back of the store, and of course, Sam very predictably had gone there. Now, if you were to ask Sam how long he was lost for, he would probably say something like, "I was lost," right? Because when you're a kid, you don't even know. Isn't that interesting that when you're a child, it takes you so long to even realize that you're lost, if you ever realize at all? But as an adult, when you experience it, it's a completely different experience. You kind of white-knuckle it, and kind of makes me panic even thinking about it. Our gospel today is one that I think we've all heard. Raise your hand if you've never heard this story before. You almost raised your hand at it because you're very obedient. I know Mike's heard it before. It's a story we've heard before. We've heard it preached a lot of times, too. It's an incredible story. I actually heard Billy Graham preach about it when he was down here in San Diego. It's a wonderful, wonderful story, and it's filled with so much love and redemption. And it's part of a series of stories that Jesus tells. We have at the start of our gospel sort of this preamble that Jesus is getting a lot of flack in his ministry because the established religious leaders of the time are snarkily saying all of these things about him. Remember, they're trying to find ways to stand in judgment of him. And what they can come up with is the fact that Jesus is spending time with people like prostitutes, with people that are stealing money, skimming off the top as tax collectors, sinners of all kinds. And of course, because of who he's hanging out with, he is guilty by association. And rather than thinking that this is something he is doing to minister to these people, they have already presumed him guilty and said clearly he's one of them if he's spending any time with them, which tells us something at the outright that the religious leaders of the time have given up on people like this, but not Jesus. And so Jesus tells three stories back to back to back all about the lost. This one is the most poignant, but he starts talking about the sheep, the shepherd who loses one sheep even though he has 99. And what does he do? He leaves the 99 and he goes to find the one that was lost. And when he does, he rejoices. And then he tells the story about the woman who has 10 coins but loses one. And what does she do? She sweeps the entire house, turns over furniture, and looks for this lost coin. And when she finds it, she rejoices. And then we have this gospel story today, the prodigal son. And the story goes like this, that a man had two sons. And one of the sons says, "Give me what's going to be coming to me anyway now." And the father agrees. He splits the estate. I never noticed that until this reading right today, that it's actually split. Both sons have their inheritance at this point. And only one of them decides to leave. He says, "I can do it better on my own." And he goes off to a far country where he spends his money on wild living. And he lives it up high on the hog. I'm imagining him in Vegas if he were living here today. Sorry, we have Vegas visitors today too, don't we? But I imagine him in Vegas spending all of his money, throwing it around at the casinos. And then he runs out of money. And now it says that at about this time, there's a famine in the land. You'd think he's kind of gathered some friends in his behavior here. But no, that's not what happens. He runs out of food. He can't survive. And he has to take a job as a pig farmer's assistant. And that's scandalous in itself when you think about who Jesus is talking to. And this guy is longing to eat the pig pods. Aren't pig pods the best, right? He just wants the food that the pigs are eating. That's how hungry he is. Have you ever looked at a pig trough and said, that's how hungry this guy is. And he's dying for food. And then he has the aha moment, right? He has that moment of clarity and he realizes, you know, even the slaves at my dad's house have it better than me. What if I go back there and just ask if I can be a slave? He says, I'm gonna rehearse my speech. I'm gonna go to him and I'm gonna say, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and earth and you, and I'm so sorry. I'm not worthy to be called your son." He has it all worked out, all of the points. He's practiced it over and over as he walks there. He says, "You know, make me a slave in your own household." And he's ready to deliver this speech when he gets to the dad's house. And of course, what he discovers is when he goes, the dad's already there waiting for him. He's run out and he's gotten him. And he brings him in and he says, you know, before the son can even finish the speech, the dad interrupts and says, no, "You're not a slave. You're my son. Come on in." And there's much rejoicing and celebration as they have this feast of the fatted calf. Now, that's how I've always understood the story. When I've heard it preached, I'm the son. You know, that's how I've always gotten the story, and since I kind of like to think of myself as the center of the universe anyway, I'm the son in the story. But I don't think I've preached this story since I've had Sam and Jack. I read the story a little different this time, and I almost couldn't read it because it was so heartbreaking. And you don't have to have kids to feel this way. I really think that's not the case. But I think I'm right, that I've been reading it wrong all these years. I've been focusing on what's going on with the son, but clearly the Bible's telling us that we should be looking at it from the perspective of the father. For three reasons. One, think about the way that this has gone in Scripture. Who's the protagonist in the story? Who's the focus of those first two stories of the shepherd and the woman who finds the coin? Who's the focus? It's the person who's looking. It's the person who's lost what's rightfully theirs. Wouldn't it be the same in the second story, in the third story? And then consider who Jesus is responding to. He's responding to these religious leaders who are saying, "Why would this man who claims to be the Messiah spend time with them?" So he in himself is defending the will of God. And for the third reason, Jesus says, "I and the Father are one." I know my Father, he knows me. So Jesus, more than anyone else, knows the heart of the Father. And so wouldn't he be telling this story from the perspective of his Father? And so really, for the first time, maybe ever, I'm reading this story not through the Son, but through the Father's eyes. A son goes to his dad and says, let's pretend you're dead. Right? Which is essentially what he's saying. He says to the father, I wish you were dead. It were better for me. It would be better for me that way. Because I'd finally get all this money. The dad obliges. He loves his son. He wants to care for his son. And even when he's provided this wonderful home, this comfort, and this support for him, the son instead decides to leave. The son abandons the father. This is heart-wrenching. Because after all of the father is done, the son says, I know better. I'm out of here. I can figure it out. And I think the language that it's the far country is really important here. Because what the guy decides to do is not, I'm going to live near my dad and understand his sphere of influence and visit. I want to go far away to a far country. I would rather be that far away and do it on my own. And the dad just sits there and he waits. How heartbreaking is that? If you're the father, I think it's safe to say they know what the son is going through. They know exactly what the son is doing. Remember later, the brother tells him, your son's been spending the money on prostitutes. Well, how do they know that? Is it safe to say maybe that the dad, in his love, sent somebody to keep tabs on him? I don't know. That's conjecture. But I know that the dad doesn't give up on the son. I imagine that dad is on the porch every single day staring at the horizon line, staring at the top of the hill for something to move, something to change up there. And he never, ever, ever gives up on his son. Every day he waits, and he waits, and he waits. And I'm sure people have told him, give up. He's gone, he's dead. In fact, that's what the father says. He was dead. Every day it breaks his heart that the sun goes down and his son isn't home. And finally one day, the son, skinny and tattered, shoeless, robeless, broken and vulnerable, comes walking up the hill. And the dad sees it, and he's up before he realizes it. And he starts running. And he starts running, and he's running, and he's running until he gets to his son. Now, what we lose in the context, of course, is that in that time, in that day, a man of that stature would be laughed at for running. It's absolutely shameful that he goes running after someone. People come to him. He doesn't move quickly. He's the boss. He's in charge. But this dad scorns the shame. And he comes running when he sees the son. Two really neat things happen here. Because as the son starts to give his speech, I think the dad had one that he had rehearsed too. Because he'd been waiting and he had time. And he gives his own speech and he interrupts the son and he says, no. Get him a coat. Get him the robe. That's what you do for an honored guest, after all. Put shoes on his feet. Shoelessness is for slaves. He's not a slave. He's a free man. And then he says, get the ring. A ring is for a son. It's a signet. It means that you're part of this family. That's a big deal. See how the father loves him. And then the second thing that happens that's really cool here is he says, slaughter the calf. Slaughter the calf that we have been fattening up, which tells me something very important here. That even as other people had given up on this son, the dad keeps fattening up the calf because he knows there will be reason to celebrate soon. I don't know if this is calf number 8 and they had given up on all the other ones as they waited, but I know this, that he never stopped giving up hope that his son would return. It's not the story of the prodigal son. I'm not the first to say that. But I realize now it's the story of a loving father who doesn't give up. When he's been abandoned, when his family gives up on him, when his son gives up on him, he doesn't. That's the story of Jesus, isn't it? God gives us everything. God cares for us and loves us. And then we say, give us our stuff. Let us be in charge for a little while. And we abandon him. We walk away. We go to the far country, as far away from God as we can get. And predictably, we find ourselves in trouble. Maybe we didn't know what we were doing in the first place. But all this time, the Father has never given up on us. And it might take us a long time to realize that we're even lost, if we realize it at all. But when we get up and go to the Father, we realize that He's already done the work of running to us. Isn't that the point of the cross? That separation between us and God has been deteriorated? God does the shameful thing of dying, even a death on a cross, so that when we come to Him, He's already done the running. That's the whole gospel in this story. That God doesn't care how far we've gone, doesn't care what we've done. He just wants us home. God loves us so much. He just wants us home. Now, as we're middling through Lent here, I'm going to ask you this question. In what ways have we kept God waiting for us on the porch? In what ways have we left Him hopeful that we would return, only to let the sun go down on us being far away? Maybe it's that we haven't been praying enough. Maybe it's that we've decided to not spend time with Him. Or maybe we've heard Him calling all of this time, and we still remain out in the far country. This is your aha moment. This is your moment of clarity right now. It's time to come home. Maybe you've never been to that home. Maybe you've run so far away from God that you've never been there. And yeah, you come to church, but you've never ever come to the Father. So whether this is your first time or your 100th time running home, this is your moment. God just wants you home. Don't waste another moment out in the far country. God doesn't care whatever you've done. He just wants you home. He just wants you home.